Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy that we get from American politics. My name is Jonah Knight. I'm an independent, and I am in Maryland.
My name is Kevin Kelton. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a moderate Democrat.
I am Greg Matuszak. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'll be your liberal Democrat.
And I'm DJ from Suffolk, Virginia, and I'll be your conservative independent.
And you, dear listener, you can find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. If you go there, you'll find a few blogs, a little bit of commentary as well. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. That's a fun place. It's a fun, joyful place that doesn't like conservatives. But on our page, we'll put some conservative stuff there as well. You can also rate and review us on iTunes. That's a game that we like to play. And you should also share our link on Facebook. So before we begin, we are right now still trying to, like everybody else, we're trying to process what exactly is going on in Orlando. Not necessarily the facts, though some of those, but how we feel. And when something like this happens, the emotions that we have, our hearts absolutely go out to all of the victims of the shooting tragedy, and all of our best wishes to everyone involved, from the families to the first responders to that entire community locally and internationally, because that's the kind of world that we live in now. So we'll talk a little bit about that later, but we try to bring out all the fun from politics, and even though some of these things are not fun, we hit those as well. But I guess to completely skip over that for the time, we had President Obama endorsing Hillary Rodham Clinton as the Democratic Party's first female official nominee for president and this year's presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party.
Thank goodness you said presumptive. Else we would have just gotten so many emails. Thank goodness. Thank you, Jonah.
Yeah. So so I go right to DJ and say, have you changed your mind about who you're voting for now that it's official?
No. Thank you for asking, but I am still supporting Gary Johnson in November. I came out for Johnson and Weld when they were nominated a couple of weeks ago, and I stand by that. I think they are of the broad choices in the field, they are certainly the best. I have said repeatedly that I think Mr. Trump and Mrs. Clinton will damage the country in equal measure, not the same measure, mind you. They will do different damage, but they will both damage the country in ways that I do not want to see happen. And the best way for me to register my issue with that is to vote for somebody else. And Gary Johnson is, in my opinion, the best of the field.
Did you see the video that Obama made?
So I was gonna go next to Kevin because he's got some joy here.
Well, I do. I mean, obviously, everybody knows I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter, and everything fell into place for her last week. But I'm actually going to give up a little bit of my time. I'm going to cede a minute of my time back to the good gentleman from Virginia, because DJ, I'd like to find out exactly what it is that you think, how you think Hillary Clinton would damage the country. You've said several times, and I believe you genuinely believe it, that they would both damage the country in different ways, but I've never quite known how you think she would damage the country.
Well, I think I do not like her economic policies. I think she clearly would move the country economically to the left. She would make government larger. She would make it more intrusive. She would increase its size and scope. So would Trump, but they would do it in different ways. Trump would, The Trump Republican Party is big government for white people. The Clinton Democratic Party is essentially big government in general. But big government is in my opinion, not the way to go.
Okay. But it sounds to me that it's more like you could make the same argument if Obama was running for a third term or Joe Biden was running or Elizabeth Warren was running. So it's not specific to Hillary Clinton. It's more specific to the policies of the Democratic Party?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
My issues are more specific to Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
And I guess even though I am probably going to vote Libertarian, the big government thing still doesn't like trigger fire in my heart. But I guess I feel a little bit muted about this now because you sort of have to compare a potential Clinton presidency with a potential Trump presidency. And between the two, my concerns about what Hillary Clinton would do, you know, she is the lesser of the two evils for me. But really, it's about when there was a large field on both sides, I could look at her and say there are so many negatives that come with her. Just from an optic standpoint, I didn't want, you know, it wasn't Obama's fault, in my opinion, that he triggered so many deep-seated racial issues in this country. And for the worst, one of the worst things about his presidency is that we saw a lot of sort of like subliminal racist stuff sort of bubble up. And I sort of feel like what Hillary Clinton brings with her are these deep-seated anti-Clinton emotions throughout a chunk of the country that will bubble up. And I just didn't want to deal with that. You know, I didn't want to deal with like what Trump is doing. And I actually didn't think he was going to start talking about Vince Foster and all that crap again. But he did. And that's just what I wanted to avoid. I wanted to try as much as possible to get past all of like that, the cult of personality crap, and move on to talking about policy and figuring out how we can agree on things. And I certainly Trump, I think, would be worse. But that's my concern with Hillary Clinton, is that we'll just get more of that, you know?
Right. And the other thing I would throw in, just to expand on my earlier answer, because there, I'm not just looking at it from a perspective of who would be governing the country after the 2016 election. I'm also looking beyond into the 20s, into the 30s, into the 40s. And I'll be blunt, I don't think the Republican Party is fit for purpose anymore. And for those of us who have our ideological disagreements with the Democratic Party, really the only really chance that we have now to get our opinions, for lack of a better term, validated or put into policy, is to get the Republican Party replaced on the right. I keep telling people, and this is something I have used repeatedly on Facebook, is that if you have Trump backers in your family or among your close friends, and you don't want them to vote for Trump, don't bother talking them into voting for Clinton, because Clinton was probably one of the reasons that they're voting for Trump. Get them to vote for Gary Johnson. They won't vote for Trump. And if you get enough of them to do it, Donald Trump finishes third. And that's what I'd love to see more than anything else right now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And voting for Gary Johnson is the way to do it.
Okay.
Go ahead, Greg.
No. But going back to the Obama endorsement, it wasn't just the endorsement of Hillary that happened that day, though. It was also the meeting with Sanders that happened on the exact same day, too, which I would have loved to have been a fly on that wall when he showed him the video and said, "Hey, come to this office. I've got a YouTube clip I want to show you." I think I don't know if you're going to like it, but the quality is excellent. I've got subtitles and everything for the Facebook people. I think your team's going to love it. And I think there's a lot of weight to it. And for those of us who were like, "Is Hillary going to be just another Obama?" Yeah. And a lot of us are okay with that. You know, we see her as a third Obama term. You know, and that doesn't mean larger government. I mean, the Obama hasn't been like this huge, like, waste, you know. We see this, we're okay with this. You know, and on top of, and for the progressives, a day and a half later, Elizabeth Warren endorses her. You know, which, we'll you guys can form your own opinion about the Sanders people turning on Warren. But, I mean, it was a pretty good day.
Yeah, know? and Biden tacitly endorsed her, and that formal endorsement is probably coming soon.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Democratic Party is clearly consolidating around her. And even if you heard, and I did hear Sanders' statement after the meeting with Obama, and it was very clear that while he felt, or at least he is pretending to feel, some sort of obligation to D.C. voters to let them have a contest, let them have their say, et cetera, et cetera, I do not expect his candidacy to last much beyond tomorrow. The D.C. primary will happen. It will go. Sanders will win or Sanders will lose. And then probably by the end of the week, Sanders will I'm suspecting here that Sanders will probably suspend his campaign by the end of this week. And I think he essentially telegraphed that after the meeting with Obama.
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to go the other way. I think it's going to go the other way. I think, I mean, I read this yesterday that he had a meeting in Vermont with his advisors and with his wife, and that he came out of it saying, nope, just the other way around. We're gonna go all the way, and we're not giving up. And so, you know, I don't know how, first of all, whether reporters got a correct read on that and whether I am actually retelling the article that I read exactly correctly, but my sense is that it would, you know, the right thing to do and the best thing for Democrats would be for Bernie Sanders to say, look, we came a long way. We're going to the convention to try to make the platform, you know, as strong as we possibly can make it for progressives. But I essentially realize that Hillary Clinton is going to be our nominee. That would be the best thing. Bernie Sanders has never done the best thing for Democrats, and I don't think he's going to start now. So I have a feeling that this cantankerous old man, and that's what I'm going to call him, I'm not one of those people that's going to sit around kissing his shoes. I think he's in this for himself. He did a lot of good at the early part of the campaign, but now he's doing a lot of bad that offsets it, so I'm not going to be a sycophant for Bernie Sanders. And I think this cantankerous old man just wants to make trouble, and he's going to continue for several more weeks.
Well, the big question then is the DNC going to treat him like the RNC treated Ron Paul, you know, 8 years ago or 4 years ago, and with no respect at the convention, or are we going to give him a night? Are we going
No, they'll give him his night, and he'll get a lot of what he wants into the platform as much as is realistic in terms of making it match with Hillary Clinton's positions.
Well,
he's
already asked for, like, no super delegates in the future.
See, that one they're going to work out. That has nothing to do with the platform.
Right.
That's a
right.
procedural
and,
thing.
And that's a big deal. Did you guys see that West Virginia voted to end super delegates from West Virginia? What? So apparently just the state in their election, like after all this, they decided that they weren't going to do it anymore. They're removing superdelegates from the West Virginia process.
Can they do that? Because I thought DNC members and elected officials. You know, tell Martin O'Malley that he can no longer be a superdelegate or whoever is
I don't know. I mean, I saw the articles that they said that they're not going to do it anymore. So I don't know. Maybe it becomes if at the state level enough states sort of rebel against it, it might change.
Do the Democrats really want? I mean, are superdelegates really worth the trouble? You know, have they ever really served the purpose that they were supposed to serve?
Yes.
When?
Yes. Because we don't have Donald Trump.
No. But my point is about this is about the Democrats, not the Republicans.
Right. And just the point: if the Republicans had superdelegates, y'all wouldn't have Donald Trump.
Given how the establishment has actually reacted to Donald Trump, I'm not necessarily gonna say that. I don't think that's true. But from the perspective of the Democratic Party, though, go ahead, Jonah.
Well, I was just gonna say that right now, who knows what the Republican establishment wants and what they're doing? But I think, you know, right after Super Tuesday, like there was a point where if it was superdelegates and Fox News was reporting superdelegate math rather than just voter math, it might have been different. But yeah, we will never know. But I do like that, you know, the joke that I've heard that I like is, you know, the Democrats just are all complaining about superdelegates and the Republicans wish they had them.
Well, there's a very simple fix to this that I think would make everybody happy. But then again, nothing I say makes everybody happy. But this is what I think they should do. Reduce superdelegates to simply currently elected congressmen, senators, and governors, former high officials like president, vice president, and a couple of key DNC members like the chair and the vice chair, but not the other 430-some-odd DNC members. Now, right now, there's 713 superdelegates. If you remove that 430-some-odd DNC members, you know, do the math, we're down to about 200-and-some-odd superdelegates, which would be, you know, instead of being 15% of the delegate electorate, it would be under 7%, maybe 5%. That, to me, makes sense. You have a little bit of flexibility where people, yes, where, you know, if the voting public was to go crazy, there's a little bit of a break there, a mechanism, but it's not 15%, which I think was way too high. So that would be my fix.
I don't know. I kind of go on.
The question is the real question is for the Democrats, have the superdelegates ever been in a position where they felt the need to block the nominee that was chosen by the primary winners? This was done in a reaction to George McGovern's nomination in 1972. But as far as I understand it, the party has never been in a position where the fellow, or in this case the woman, who won the most delegates through primaries and caucuses was someone so toxic that the superdelegates broke the other way. That's never happened. So the question I think Democrats should really be asking themselves is, okay, wait a minute. Was it perhaps just the unique confluence of events in 1972 that led to McGovern's nomination? And if it's just a weird one-off from that era, do we really need to go through this superdelegate controversy that continually gives, that has really given them problems in terms of getting the party united this year? I just think superdelegates are more trouble than they are worth. But that's just me.
Well, you know, but the other thing, people seem to think that the only reason for superdelegates is for somehow to give this select group of people, this elite group of people, power to change the outcome. That's not it. The superdelegates that I'm talking about are congressmen and senators and the president and the vice president and former presidents and vice presidents. What, do you want these people to have to go down to their union hall to run for delegate on a Sunday in April? You know, there's a reason that these people are
That's what ours did.
You know, Well, you know, you know, 200 congressmen have to go down and run again. It's bad enough that they're running every 2 years to be congressmen, but that they have to be delegates at the DNC. It's, you know, I don't see any reason why they can't be honorary delegates.
It's why Republican congressmen have such terrible voting records. It's why they're never in Congress.
I do think it's worth spending a minute on the fact that the history behind Hillary being a woman and being a the first official nominee.
What, do you know something about her sexuality?
Well, I've heard just what I read on Facebook.
You said a history of her being a woman, so
yeah. Well, I think there's my son. I don't think I've told you guys this story before. My son is in second grade, and he has a placemat with all the presidents on it. Have I told you this story?
Yeah, we have one of those at the house, yeah.
And so he's looking at the placemat, and one day he says, how come a woman has never been president? Right? Because you're in second grade, and you recognize that.
Right.
And we didn't really have a good answer. And so he said, well, I want a woman to be president. And then the election season started, and we started talking about it, and he said, well, where are the women? Why aren't women running? We said, well, there is one on each side, and there's Carly Fiorina. He said, well, she should be president. We said, no, she should not.
No, let's be serious now, son. No.
And, this is great. Keep going.
And it was, so we talked about it, and it's just like, and I tried to talk to him about, you know, he's in second grade, and I'm like, well, the policy of blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I don't care. Is she a woman? Well, then she should be president. And so, you know, Hillary went, got enough delegates through, you know, California, New Jersey. And the next day he said, Milo, you'll be happy about this. Hillary Clinton got the nomination. And he said, yes. And he did the thing where he pulls his elbow back with a fist. He's like, yes. And so it's, I mean, there's as much as many sort of issues that I may have at 41 years old and remembering when I, you know, watched Bill Clinton run and watch all of that. I think it is a big deal. And I watched her speech and I watched her video and it means something. And like, you know, I've talked before about how, you know, at the Benghazi hearing, that was a bunch of white dudes trying to smack around an old lady. And it sort of felt like this. And I was on her side. Like, that's the situation where I'm like, okay, now I'm with her. And then she leaves that situation and starts talking again, and I get upset. But it was the same thing. I watched the video, and I watched her speech, and I was like, you know what? Good. Right. We're there. We need a woman to be president because most of the world has already had women as leaders of their countries. And what's wrong with us for doing this, for taking so long? And then, you know, she goes back on the campaign trail, right?
So. Yeah, you know, my two daughters, one is 7 and one is 10, and they keep asking why we haven't had a woman president. And I keep saying, I don't know. Why haven't we? And they're shocked. And I was going to ask Emily tonight, and I know we are greatly disadvantaged without her, as usual, when she can't make it. But if her being a nominee, if her being a presumptive nominee, you know, if that made a big difference in any way, if like she'd go, oh, you know what, I would think about just her being presumptive nominee, if this is like means something to her, or if it was just like, oh, well, Jill Stein was a nominee.
I know it was meaningful to her because we talked about that on Facebook. Whether it might make her vote for Hillary would be a different thing. But,
yeah,
you know, my sense is I agree with what Jonah said and what everybody seems to be saying, which is that it really is a big deal. And I was surprised, you know, at the response on Facebook the night of June 7th when she officially supposedly crossed over. How much vitriol there was towards this historic achievement for women. You know, ask women, like you said, ask Emily, but I mean, I've seen it across Facebook, which is my sample that I use, that this does truly mean a lot to women, just as Barack Obama truly meant a lot to black people. And just as, you know, the day that a Jewish person or a Muslim or an atheist becomes the nominee of a major party, that will mean a lot to those groups. And I can continue going down the demographics, a Latino. So I think we discount it way too much for some reason. Something happened between October and today where people have piled on to Hillary Clinton and there's this Clinton, you know, backlash. But it's a big deal that a woman could be president and probably will be president of the United States. And to discount that or say that millennials don't care anymore or something, I think will be a grave tactical error on the part of the Republicans and on the part of Donald Trump, who seems to be trying to, you know, argue against that. And I think it's really a mistake for people to discount how important that is symbolically and in truth.
Well, I actually have a very simple answer as to why there has not been a woman president until now, and that is because Margaret Thatcher was not born in the United States of America. She was born in Britain. Their gain, our loss.
Well, it's, and Golda Meir had been born here, which might have happened in 68, so...
That is very true. A couple of other observations. One, it has now dawned on me that Jonah is younger than I am. Not sure how I can process that. more to the point here,
He's younger than I am, too, so yeah. I don't know how I can deal with that.
More to the point here, I think, and I'm going to actually sort of go a bit far afield of what we normally discuss. I think what this shows us, and it's actually something that we have seen throughout history, we actually saw it, frankly, right after the Civil War when Katie Stanton and others tried to get the move to enforce civil rights for African Americans in the post-Civil War South was moving forward in the Reconstruction era Congresses. Katie Stanton and others tried to push for women's civil rights as well, and the response was, and it was flatly said, "This is the Negro's hour," was the exact phrase I think that Charles Sumner gave her. Obviously disappointed her a great deal, but I think in America, for whatever reason, going all the way back there, and you don't just see it in politics, you see it in the Gamergate nonsense, you see it on you see it all over the place. For whatever reason, sexism is considered less tawdry, less problematic, less embarrassing than racism is. When Barack Obama was nominated, when Barack Obama was elected, even those of us who voted against him acknowledged that the historical import of it, and those who were upset at the historical import of it, either had to be muted or had to keep themselves in those various small corners where light doesn't usually shine much on American polity. Misogynists don't have those limitations. For whatever reason, for whatever reasons, and none of them good, they are given a greater voice in the public square than outright racists. And I think that's what we... that's one of the things that we are seeing. Yes, Mrs. Clinton is highly controversial. Yes, she is highly disliked for who she is and some of the things that she has done from a policy perspective, from policy perspectives. But I also think that a large part of this is that it is easier to say nasty things about women in America than it is to say nasty things about black people. That's not to say that it...
true.
You know, and just for the record, it is still too easy to say nasty things about black people from a cultural perspective. But it is even easier to say nasty things about women. And that's what we are seeing. Right. And that is deeply unfortunate.
Right. Yeah. And it also can be a lot more subtle and... what's the word I'm looking for? Feminism. I mean, it's not feminism. You know, an anti-woman position is easier to kind of like... promote with just the slightest kind of a patronizing kind of comment or attitude.
We fall for we fall for misogynist nuance far more than we fall for racist nuance in America.
Right, right.
So
coming back to the election, and here's why I kind of deferred my first answer back to DJ about what he's concerned about should Hillary Clinton be elected president. You know, this election now, to me, is stop Trump at all cost. That's what the election is about to me. And so, although I know that his motive is absolutely pure, as I believe Jonah's is and as I believe Emily's will be if she's, you know, leaning towards Johnson come closer to November, to me, this election is about not wasting a vote that could stop Donald Trump, because the risk of him getting elected is just too great. So my goal on this podcast series from now until the election, and I know that this is an uphill battle and I may, you know, fail miserably, my goal is to get DJ and Jonah and possibly Emily to vote for Clinton, not to vote third party. Not because I disrespect your choice, and DJ, you explained beautifully, you articulated beautifully why you think it's important to have a strong third party and a strong Libertarian Party. But my goal is going to be to knock you off that logic and get you to vote against Trump. And the only way to truly cast a vote that's going to stop Donald Trump from being elected president is to vote for Hillary Clinton. Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
Well, especially since the polls are so close, and especially with Johnson, or as he's now being referred to as Big Johnson. I'm going to refer to him for the rest of the season as Big Johnson. His poll numbers are pulling so high that it's causing Trump and Clinton to be almost neck and neck in some states. Fox just had him polling at 12%, Survey USA had him 13% in Utah. Now, most places have Big Johnson. I'm going to pull out T-shirts from the 90s and the 80s, and I think I'm hoping that's going to become popular. Have him about at 6%. But still, that's incredible for a libertarian, okay? So at this point, you guys are going to be like, now I have to vote for Clinton.
No.
First of all, let me say...
What do you guys think about these numbers?
Let me say to Greg and Kevin, first of all, while I do not think you will succeed, I will say the struggle is the glory, so by all means, continue. The other thing, just a couple things about what the polls are saying right now. That that poll that Fox had out showed Johnson taking, if without Johnson in the race, Clinton is up 3 points. With Johnson stated in the race, Clinton is up 3 points. So he actually did not have an impact one way or the other. He clearly pulled more from Trump than he did from Clinton in Utah, because the Utah poll, which was Survey USA, which came out this afternoon, by the way, it has the two of them even in Utah at 35% apiece. Democrats in statewide elections in Utah are lucky to get 40%. So the only reason that Clinton is competitive in Utah is because Trump is so badly disliked and because Johnson is there as an alternative. But I will also say this. It is easier, far easier, for Greg and Kevin to think about the stop Trump idea because they are, frankly, understandably, as they are Democrats, very comfortable with a Clinton presidency. Jonah and Emily and I, by contrast, do not share that comfort. We do not have the comfort with a Clinton presidency. We think this president has made several policy mistakes, which we think Mrs. Clinton will continue. We think, well, certainly Emily and I can't speak for Jonah on this one. We think that the direction Clinton will take the country in is not the right direction. And we do not wish to vote for her for that reason. Yes, Donald Trump.
Isn't going in the wrong direction better than going off the tracks and crashing into the abyss? Because that's what a Trump presidency represents to me.
Like I said, a Trump presidency will do quite a bit of damage to the country. That is true. But a Clinton presidency will also do damage to my perspective and to Emily's perspective. It will make the ridiculous corporatization of health insurance and health care even worse, even more damaging, even more problematic. The inconsistency on foreign policy, which both candidates share, although they're differently inconsistent, can cause great problems. Now, granted, I think Mrs. Clinton will probably be an improvement over the current president, but not enough to get me to vote for her. And while Trump will do certain things that will damage the country, Clinton will do other things that will damage the country. Mrs. Clinton's idea for who should be Supreme Court justice scares the hell out of me. Donald Trump's idea for what a president should be kind of frightens me a little too. But what Mrs. Clinton thinks federal power should have concerns me, greatly concerns me. What Hillary Clinton wants the federal government to do in health care, in economics in general, greatly concerns me. And when I see what either of them could do as president of the United States, yes, Clinton, in certain areas, Clinton is superior to Trump. In certain areas, I hate to say it, Trump is superior to Clinton. But from my perspective,
Can you give me one example of where Trump...
He's going to say taxation.
That actually is one of them. As bad as Trump is on taxation, and he is all over the map, he is superior to her on that issue. He is not superior to her on European policy. He is not superior to her on...
Can I point out that in the middle of that sentence is the word Nazi?
He is. Yeah, that's funny. You can. They're frankly equally bad on Asian policy. They're both pretty terrible on Taiwan. Clinton more publicly than Trump. They're both terrible on Korea.
What about on ISIS? What about on a free press? What about on values? On we're talking about
neither,
a five-year-old and a 10 and a 12-year-old looking up to the President of the United States as a role model. What about
Donald Trump has problems with the libel laws in this country. Hillary Clinton has problem with political speech in this country. Neither of them are friends of the First Amendment. They just attack the First Amendment on different fronts. They do. I'm sorry. Because you like how Hillary Clinton attacks the First Amendment doesn't mean I have to she attacks the First Amendment. Because she does. I'm sorry. The entire Democratic Party has endorsed. But a far too large percentage of the Democratic Party has endorsed Harry Reid's attempt to amend the First Amendment. I'm sorry, but that's dangerous. That is dangerous. Yes, Trump is dangerous differently, but that doesn't make what Reid and what Clinton are trying to do any less dangerous. And lest we forget, the whole thing about Citizens United, the whole reason that that everyone is thrown in about how bad Citizens United was because the Supreme Court said no, these guys cannot be thrown in jail for putting a corporation together to make a film about Hillary Clinton. That case was literally about using the government to silence critics of Hillary Clinton. That was the purpose of the decision. So, yes,
okay. And
is Trump a problem? Yes. Do I want to vote for him? No. Will I vote for him? No. Has Hillary Clinton shown me that she would be superior to Trump across the spectrum of issues? I'm sorry, but she hasn't. And I don't think she will.
And I'll just say that although I don't share a whole lot of those concerns in regards to I don't dwell on them a lot. My reasons for voting for Johnson are different. They are it's really at the core of a lot of my political thought and belief is this great desire in me to have a credible third party. And when it was Nader, then I would do that because that was a sort of priority. And when it was possibly the Green Party, that's fine. You can have my vote. And if I can possibly get a third party anywhere, a little bit higher, a little bit more credible in the grand scheme of things, I think that's better for everybody. And because I'm going to be casting my vote in Maryland, my vote doesn't matter for president.
Wait,
the only way it matters
living,
at all.
You won't be living in Maryland, will you?
I won't be. I won't be.
Then,
but
then I think we
I
have
to
word
be
for that. You are the definition of voter fraud.
It's a rigged system.
It's a rigged system.
I can't.
Where?
I can't
how can
vote.
I report you? I think there's a reward.
I
get to vote twice now.
I believe that. Actually, I haven't looked into this yet. Kevin, maybe you'll know. How long do I have to be a resident of California before I vote in California?
In Ohio, it's 6 weeks.
Yeah,
is it 6 weeks?
I don't know.
In
but
Ohio,
I don't think it's 6 months or
okay.
anything like
whether,
that. So.
Whether
well,
Jonah
California
votes in
will
Maryland,
be blue too.
Yeah, whether Jonah votes in Maryland or whether he votes in California, if Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are close enough in Maryland and California that Jonah's vote would make a difference, a meteor has wiped out yeah. large chunks of people, including
yes.
probably Kevin. Okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'm assuming that Kevin will actually be alive come voting day, in which case there's probably not been a in which case there's probably not been a catastrophe large enough for this to be an issue. So
are you kidding? We're Democrats. We have lots of dead people voting all the time for us.
Well,
in which case if the dead vote, we go right back to my initial issue, which is California and Maryland will never be swing states.
Right.
So no, there's not an issue there.
Going back to Jonah though, you're saying you pretty much just want to be a contrarian. You bring up Ralph Nader just to piss me off.
That's not the only reason. There are many reasons to bring up Ralph Nader.
Oh, just to anger me. My ulcer
is
killing
me. Or an 8% libertarian vote going to, you know, change the two-party system?
Well, here's what I've learned. I've learned that in California, my soon-to-be home state, the libertarian is a very strong movement out there, and there are dozens and dozens of office holders throughout the state. So I'm very optimistic about completely replacing the Republican Party.
News
so
to me. It may be
yeah.
true,
if the libertarians hit 10% in Virginia, they're guaranteed ballot access for the gubernatorial election and the U.S. Senate election in the next 2 years. So it is a step forward against the binarism that frankly has given us the disaster that we are seeing today. Donald Trump is a symptom of the binarist political system that we have and that needs serious change.
No, you cannot blame the two-party system, Trump on the two-party system, when you have the Tea Party and you have all sorts of other, and just practically Donald Trump. You guys bought your ticket. I say let you crash. You guys.
Oh, I don't mind if the Republicans.
But
here's the thing: for the Republicans
right.
to crash, people like me have to vote Libertarian, not Republican. If we all vote for
right,
Hillary Clinton,
right.
the Republicans still finish in second. If we vote for Gary Johnson, the Republicans finish third, and they finally head for oblivion.
By the
yeah.
way, Greg, I just want to compliment you. That was a reference to the movie
Airplane.
From 1979.
Well done.
Point counterpoint. And
well
the counterpoint
done.
Guy said, Yeah, they were debating airline safety, and the plane was in the sky, and nobody knew whether it was going to get in or not. And they cut to this 60 Minutes parody, and the counterpoint guy says, "Shayna, they knew what they were getting into. They bought their tickets. I say let them crash.
Oh, well done, Kevin. No one ever Good gets job. That reference.
So
nicely done. Nicely
but
done.
Here's a segue. We were just talking about assaults on the First Amendment. If indeed Mr. Trump becomes president. But there's also another big issue this week, the Second Amendment, which has been even more magnified because of events in Orlando. So why don't we turn to that for a minute and just, you know, what do you guys think? I mean, I know, DJ, you had some strong opinions about, you know,
I do.
How this is going to not only affect the race, but affect, you know, the country.
I do, and frankly, I've held off from saying anything until now because I've had some personal issues that have sort of kept me away from being as active as I normally would be. But I've used that to essentially be patient and say I'm going to wait until to see as much data come in as I can. The more I see the arguments, the more disturbed I get, because we seem to be reacting as if this was some sort of bizarre random weather event, and we look at it as a problem to be solved. And this isn't to say that the folks who are putting up issues should necessarily shut up. That's not what I mean to say. What I mean to say is that we need to talk about other things. The enemy, Daesh, essentially claimed responsibility for this. This clown declared himself loyal to Daesh in the middle of this action. And Daesh is not like Al-Qaeda, which was interested in Islamic theory and how to spill as much blood as possible. They're not like the Taliban, which was largely about the same thing, and even more localized in Afghanistan. These are people who are... These are folks who have Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist regime in a lot of the leadership positions. They know how to manipulate the West. They did it for much of the 70s and 80s to figure out how to divide the West in place against ourselves. They're looking at the fact that one of their own, or someone who claimed to be one of their own, killed 49 people, and our response has been basically to yell at each other for 48 hours and barely mention them, right or left. And this is a bonanza for them, which means they're going to do it again, or they're going to try to do it again. Which means folks in our LGBT community have a gigantic target on their backs. They're going to get hit over and over and over again because the enemy knows, until we show them otherwise, hey, if we hit the Twin Towers on 9/11, and our enemy came together, is their perspective. We hit a gay nightclub in Orlando, and they all fell upon each other like wolves. Let's do that one again. So we need to be serious about this, and among other things, you know, we can argue about gun control and gun rights all we want. That's what you do in a democracy. You argue about issues. Fine, no problem. We have that discussion. But there are certain things I think we need to say as a country and going forward. Is look, this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. One, we actually have to go past the post World War II nonsense of police action and congressional authorizations. We need an actual declaration of war, because a declaration of war actually names the enemy. Which is, I think, the biggest mistake that we had starting in 2001. The enemy was not named. We talked about radical Islam, terrorism, violent extremism, radical Islamism, or whatever it is, radical jihadism. And some of those labels are fine. But they don't name the enemy. Daesh, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban. I'd like to throw in the Bashar Assad regime. I'd probably lose that argument, but hell, let's have the argument. Let's name the enemy, so that we can then say, okay, our goals are to defeat or destroy these groups of people who are trying to kill us. Don't come up with vague phrases. Abraham Lincoln did not fight slavery in 1861. He fought the Confederacy. Franklin Delano Roosevelt did not ask for a declaration of war against fascism or imperialism. He said, he didn't even ask for a declaration on Nazi Germany. He let Nazis declare war on us first. He said, I want a declaration of war against the Empire of Japan. We need to name the enemy. We need to name this as a war. And then we can recognize, okay, this is a war. We expect the executive to have greater authority in a war. Are we comfortable with that? Maybe yes, maybe no. Let's talk about what wartime authority we are willing to give the commander-in-chief and what wartime authority we are not willing to give the commander-in-chief. So long as we do not call it a war, all of these things are fuzzy. We need them clear-cut. The second thing we need to do, which I don't think has any...
Well, wait, let's talk about that, because that's a really good point.
That's so a huge point.
Can we jump in? I think that was a tremendous observation. And I would agree, if we did it just the way you laid it out, I'm 100% on board with you. If we're talking about declaring war on Daesh, declaring war on ISIL, or however we want to, whoever we want to name. The only problem I see with your suggestion, which is it in and of itself is great. The problem is I see how this becomes politicized. And what it is the Donald Trumps of the world, and quite frankly, the Republican Party will say, yes, we should name the enemy. It should be radical Islamic terrorists.
No.
And then you're going to have the president and the Democrats saying, no, we cannot name them. It should be jihadist terrorists. And we're going to get caught in semantics. That's my only concern.
No, that was his point.
And that's my point.
We don't use vague terms.
You name them. You say, no, it's Daesh.
Right.
It's Al-Qaeda. And if you have to list them, you list them. And maybe we argue about who's on the list. But no, you don't go with a vague stuff. Call it war against radical Islam. No, that's ridiculous. Are we invading Saudi Arabia today? No. You have to name them.
I'm with you. And here's the thing.
Okay.
Let me just finish this thought. What you've just said is a very big change in how this country has approached war for 230 years. Instead of naming a state, or in the case of the Civil War, the South, instead of naming a geographic region that we're at war with, we'd be naming a group. I think it's a great idea, but it's a big jump politically.
Admittedly, particularly where Al-Qaeda is involved, but yeah, I think it's something we have to do.
The other thing is,
right,
with naming and going to war, like you said, wartime president, wartime powers, we have a group that won't even see a potential Supreme Court justice because we have a quote unquote lame duck president because it's his eighth year. It's his last year. Could you imagine how they'd say, well, we can't give a president wartime power because he still has 8 months left.
You're right.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
But that's a debate we have to have. And if the Republican Party is really going to say, we don't want to declare war because we don't want Barack Obama to be a wartime leader, voters will probably consign them to many, many defeats in November. This is something where the country has to it doesn't have to speak with one voice, but the voices all have to attempt to say the same thing. And that's what has to be done. And yes, we may run into trouble and struggles and things, but in my opinion on this one, we have to try. That's the first thing. And the second thing I just want to get in quickly is we have to get past the notion, and unfortunately a lot of Americans are not past this notion, that somehow LGBT Americans are different from ordinary Americans, because the enemy doesn't see it that way. The enemy doesn't see LGBT Americans. They see LGBT Americans as Americans. And they hit them because they are Americans. And they are hitting them in particular because making them victims helps them because we stupidly divide amongst ourselves over arguments like this. That's one of the things we need to put aside. We need to say, look, you hit one of us, you hit all of us, and they are just as American as we are, and that's who we are, and you're not going to be able to play this little game with us anymore. That's the second thing we need to do.
Well, first of all, who is devaluing the lives of the 49 that we lost yesterday? I haven't seen anybody say that. So where are you hearing
that, DJ? My Facebook feed has a couple of folks who have linked. They have linked to articles where various folks are essentially saying that these people had it coming because they were gay.
Let's not
kid ourselves. In the past, 6 months, various, we'll say the GOP, and let's not kid ourselves here either, have introduced over 200 bills that are, and not even kind of, very anti-LGBT. I mean, plain, flat out. So to say, like, some people and kind of people, we're talking elected officials. Okay?
Yeah.
And when I say elected officials, I'm looking at you, elected GOP people. And you had to be elected by somebody who you're trying to charm. So it's not that far of a stretch what you're saying there, TJ. I mean, and that's kind of a burr under my saddle that these guys are like, we can shove around this group to get points. And because that's, you might bleep this out, shitty, you know. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to say it not loud, we're going to bleep it out.
I'm not beeping anything.
Okay.
But let me respond to one thing that DJ just said, because, again, 98% of what he's saying I'm in total agreement with. But the one thing is, when you keep saying the enemy did this and the enemy did that, that's where I kind of part ways with you, because everything that I've read and seen on television in the last 24 hours or so suggests that whether this man thought he was, you know, in bed with ISIL or not, he was a lone wolf. I don't think that anybody gave him any directions to hit a gay club. I think he was homophobic, and he used his hatred of the United States and his affinity for ISIL as a cover for his homophobia. So,
and I don't necessarily dispute that, Kevin. What I'm trying to say is, from the perspective of the rest of the world, particularly from the perspective of folks that ISIL or Daesh is recruiting, this was a win for them. And they will look at this and they will say, okay, yeah, this sort of fell into our laps, but hey, this is a really great way to strike a blow against these people. So yes, they may not have been directly responsible for this, but I'm going to predict here, if there is another LGBT club that is hit, and I fear to say they will attempt it, they will be the ones who do it. Because they see this as an opportunity, and they're going to hit that opportunity over and over again until we make it clear that they're not going to gain anything from this sort of thing. That's what I think I was attempting to convey in my statement.
Okay. So, guys, we're coming close on the hour now. How do you think this is going to affect the presidential race, the whole Orlando, you know, out follow-up?
Well, you know, if Trump could actually say something without getting in his own way, perhaps this could help him. I mean, he's always been, you know, to say tougher, but he just, I mean, his first statement was just all sorts of wrong. Like, you know, please don't take your time to congratulate me that I was right on this the whole time. But, you know, what I want,
the worst possible response any presidential candidate could have.
Yeah. Right. But what I want is firmer laws and blah, blah, blah. I mean,
I will say this, and actually I would say Mrs. Clinton has had a good couple of weeks for a reason that maybe we did not expect, in that essentially Trump took aim at Obama. The Democrats defended Obama, went after Trump. I don't know who's defending Trump at this point. But Mrs. Clinton actually took the opportunity to engage. Do y'all remember triangulation from the 90s, from her husband's day?
Sure. Yeah.
She essentially engaged in some rather interesting triangulation today, because they asked her, they said, well, Donald Trump was upset that the president didn't mention radical Islam. What's your statement on that? And she said, I'm okay with radical jihadism. I'm okay with radical Islamism. I don't like smearing an entire religion. Now, from a policy perspective, again, I've already discussed how I don't like the vagueness. But from a political perspective, it was rather, rather good triangulation between Trump and Obama. I think she did that very well, and I think from a political perspective, she is the only winner, which means she is the only winner, besides Daesh, unfortunately, out of this horrifying tragedy, because she managed to be in a situation where she could triangulate between Trump and the president. And she did it well.
She said something else today that was really, really, I don't want to say smart, but smart. because it's a tragedy. And I don't want to say, wow, she really took advantage of this tragedy. She was talking about when she was a senator in 2000, at 9/11. She said, I was a Democratic senator. with a Republican mayor with a Republican governor and a Republican president, and we all looked beyond that and we got together behind each other and we worked together. He goes, today it's not like that. This is driving boundaries, and it shouldn't be like that. A tragedy happens, we should all get together. And, you know, and why isn't that happening? You know, and it was like, oh, she's right. Why aren't we all, like, getting together on this? And like, oh, hey, let's not politicize this. But the first things people are talking about is, well, it's this group, it's that group, it's gun control, you know, instead of, you know. Let's work together.
Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, I asked this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but Jonah, what's the libertarian perspective on Orlando?
Interesting. So the statement that Gary Johnson released says this. In this immediate aftermath of what is clearly a tragic and despicable attack, our thoughts must be with the victims, he said. Regardless of what the motivation is ultimately found to be, this violence against people simply going about their lives is both cowardly and infuriating. We must allow the authorities to do their jobs, understand how this attack came about, and then respond accordingly. It is not a time to either politicize or jump to conclusions.
Okay, but in practicality, what would a libertarian president do? I mean, he's against, you know, foreign interventions, right? I believe...
Do you want another episode of Jonah's Libertarian
Corner? I love it.
So the basic philosophy of the Libertarian Party with do you want gun control or do you want foreign intervention?
I was thinking about how a Libertarian president would approach this situation.
So the idea is that it's this idea that we're not the world's police force, but if there is a significant issue that needs to be resolved with the United States, that we do it. So when it comes down to some sort of a genocidal kind of issue out there in the world, it doesn't get ruled out just because it's not on our doorstep. But the priority is, can we deal with it diplomatically before we send in the army? Is the basic gist of the thing. So with something like this, the first step would be, you know, when we look outside of our borders, would be to try to figure out what we can do diplomatically without the military as the first step.
Well, where does he stand on ISIL and
to be fair, Kevin, this is of course put before I have made my transition to the Libertarian Party and thus given them a neoconservative wing. So they may speak differently after I'm officially joined up.
Okay.
But I think I would say, given that this is that this actually is an attack on American soil, and this was an attack on us, and that this was something that ISIL has now claimed credit for, even if it did fall under their lap, they are clearly saying, hey, this is wonderful, and we're going to do our part to make sure that this stuff happens again. I would say any president, including a libertarian president, would say, okay, what do we have to do to make sure that this does not happen again? What do we have to do internationally, whether it's diplomatically or through force, to make sure this doesn't happen again? Now, there'd be a huge argument within the Libertarian Party about how much diplomacy and how much force to use. There's going to be a large argument within the rest of the country on that. But I think they would say this is an attack on our soil. We need to respond accordingly to make sure this stuff does not happen again.
I think the core of the philosophy is, Let's look at it, think about it, figure out what's going on before we leap. I think that there would be maybe less of a chance to sort of jump into an armed conflict without knowing all the information, because there's a huge chunk of the party and the philosophy that doesn't want to do it in the first place. So I think they would need a lot of tangible evidence before they would grudgingly send in the Marines.
Do you guys want to know what Jill Stein had to say about this?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, I thought you guys were just going to say no. No, not at
of course
all.
We do. Yeah.
Come on, she might be the first female president. Yes, I want to hear it.
No. Jill Stein's in it for Jill Stein. She called immediately for more hate crime enforcement. She also called... I'm not kidding!
No, you said hate crime and then you took a big pause. That's why I'm laughing.
Oh,
she called
no,
for more hate crime.
More hate crime. more hate crimes. She also called for a ban on assault rifles. And her heart goes out for everybody. You know, I can't think of anyone more useless than Jill Stein.
And I'm trying to think of, I mean...
Well, we'll talk about the Constitution Party in a future episode.
Oh, gosh, you're right. I'm sorry. No, Jill Stein is. I mean, just the worst.
I just think it's amusing to me. DJ just introduced a brand new term, the neoconservative wing of the Libertarian Party. And I'm thinking, oh, well, there goes that. That was great for about a week and a half. You just ruined, like, there's another party that sucks now.
It's a big party. It's a big tent party. You can be on the neoliberal side.
Ladies and gentlemen, just call me Gregors. My destiny is to be 13th at table.
So should we head into predictions?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yes,
yeah,
that does sound good.
We got some stuff going on.
So, okay, I'll go first. I've been saying it all along, but I've seen nothing in the news this week to lead me to question it. It still looks to me like Elizabeth Warren is the leading candidate to be the Democratic vice presidential nominee, although now people are questioning whether she has the experience in government to be qualified to be president, which I found to be a new wrinkle because a year ago everybody was saying she should be running for president. On the Republican side, I think that whatever happened this week in terms of the war on terror and the Trump campaign, which has been floundering, is going to somehow impact who he ultimately goes for. So it could come back to somebody like a Chris Christie or a Marco Rubio who's going to have heavy foreign policy chops.
Hmm. Well, I don't have a prediction, but I do have an observation. I think that I suspect that Chris Christie is not actually picking up Donald Trump's McDonald's orders. But the problem is that it's entirely believable that he is, and I think that's the problem.
Okay. Any other predictions?
Who do you think Hillary is picking for her Veep?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, either of you guys.
No, I really don't know. I feel like I don't know. It's confounding. There's something that tells me that it's not Warren, but I don't have a better solution, you know.
Right on. What about you, DJ?
Yeah. I am more likely to believe it could be Warren than I have been in the past. I don't necessarily think Warren is a good pick for Mrs. Clinton. I think it's an excellent pick for Gary Johnson because it leaves more of the center open to him, I think. But that may be... It may be she may decide to go for a two-woman ticket. It may be she thinks Mrs. Warren can... Or that Elizabeth Warren can get the energy of some of the Bernie Sanders folks back on board, so she may decide she wants to do that. I think on the Republican side, I think Donald Trump's choice will also be a woman, but then someone will tell him, no, Mr. President, Emilia Clarke is just the actress for Daenerys Targaryen. She is not actually Daenerys Targaryen, and you cannot use the dragons to defeat ISIS. In which case, he will probably go with someone conventional. I think it's probably going to be Senator Bob Corker. So,
ooh,
that's my prediction.
Old school. He does like old white guys. I think Trump will go with a woman. I think there's only so many times he can say,
But wait.
I think he can only say, oh, but women loves me. And then they keep showing him polls and he goes, whoa, what do you mean? I'm down 35 points in women. Oh, no, this can't be true. So I think he'll go with Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon. I think that would be a perfect place for him. Down south, geographically, it counters his New York and upstate. I think it's a nice balance for the ticket. You know, I mean, he's not going to win the Washington, California, Portland, but it would be nice, Oklahoma. And she's popular. She's doing a fine job there, you know, except for her trashy daughter, which we're not supposed to talk about.
Oh, trashy daughter.
Yeah, she lives what? in a mobile home attached to the governor's mansion for a while.
Oh, I will Google this.
Oh, it's great stuff.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, and no, it's not going to be Warren. Maureen Dowd wrote an article, which was a fan fiction piece about. It was just the weirdest piece about Warren and Hillary, like, kind of just chatting and being really passive aggressive and shitty to each other, each bringing up like all the nastiest things, and you know, just how people don't really talk to each other. But I don't think that has anything to do. But if you get a chance to read it, it's worth like taking off, you know, 10 minutes of your life. But I still think it's going to be Julian Castro. I really do. And I think at that point, everyone will say, go home, turn the lights off. It's done.
No,
it is not done because of if enough people vote for Jerry Johnson, Donald Trump finishes third.
I'm sorry. Do you mean Big Johnson?
Yes. Vote Big Johnson to put Donald Trump in third.
Big Johnson candidates.
Yeah. Hey, if you enjoyed this, then you should go over to iTunes and give us 5 stars and say that, hey, I like these guys. They are kind of funny. And then you should go over to Facebook and go to facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast and like it. And then write a note because we love little notes. And then tell all your friends and share it. Get out there in the world and enjoy life. And tell your friends that you like them, because otherwise they're not really your friends. So just tell them. And that's it. And we'll see you guys next week.